Priya, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Presidents Obama and Putin discuss Syria and Ukraine. Presidents Obama and Putin met late Monday on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly session, agreeing they must help defeat the Islamic State group and hold military-to-military talks to avoid any potential conflict in Syria. But they disagreed over the country's political future. Their exchange, the first in more than 2 years, was described as focused and businesslike. Earlier in his remarks to the General Assembly, Mr. Obama said the U.S. is prepared to work with any nation, including Russia, to resolve the Syrian conflict, but it can't allow a return to the status quo.
Assad and his allies can't simply pacify the broad majority of a population who've been brutalized by chemical weapons and indiscriminate bombing. Yes, realism dictates that compromise will be required to end the fighting and ultimately stamp out ISIL. But realism also requires a managed transition away from Assad and to a new leader.
The Russians see Mr. Assad as a bulwark against extremists and oppose his removal from power. The two men also discussed Ukraine, with Mr. Obama underscoring his support for the country's sovereignty in light of the conflict involving pro-Russian separatists. The interim leader of the Central African Republic, Catherine Samba-Panza, left early from the UN General Assembly session to return home because of renewed sectarian violence plaguing the capital of her country. Reports from Bangui say dozens have been killed in 3 days of clashes involving Christians and Muslims, sparked by the death of a Muslim man. There were protests like this one, where protesters set fire on to tires and demanded UN peacekeepers and French soldiers leave. At least 3 people died when they marched on the presidential palace. The CAR erupted in sectarian violence in 2013. This is VOA News. A suspected Saudi-led airstrike targeting Houthi Shia rebels instead struck a wedding party in the country's southwest, killing nearly 40 people. Many of the victims were women and children. Dozens were wounded. The coalition spokesman denied any involvement, insisting no air operations were conducted in the area over the past 3 days. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani will depart New York for Tehran Monday, cutting short his visit to the UN General Assembly so that he can take part in a ceremony for Iranians killed in a stampede during the annual Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia. At least 170 Iranians have been confirmed dead among those killed last week outside the holy city of Mecca. More than 300 Iranians are still missing. The death toll now, about 770 total, is expected to rise. Taliban fighters in Afghanistan have seized control of Kunduz after staging a well-coordinated offensive against the northern city. It is a major setback for the year-old unity government and Afghan security forces, so says RAND Corporation South Asia analyst Jonah Blank.
This is not merely the first time that the Taliban have taken Kunduz. This is the first time they've taken any provincial capital since they were ousted from power in 2001.
Afghan officials say commando units of national security forces have arrived in Kunduz and are preparing to launch a counteroffensive to retake control. Interior Ministry spokesman Sadiq Siddiqui says most of Kunduz had fallen to the Taliban and said Afghan forces were regrouping at the airport. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, in his remarks to the UN General Assembly Monday, urged other nations to invest in economic development in Africa.
Africa is not looking for handouts. Rather, it is looking for partners in massive infrastructural development, in creating and exploiting the value chains from the God-given natural resources, and in improving the quality of life of the continent's citizens.
Mr. Mugabe also called for UN reforms and has been a longtime critic of the lack of a permanent Security Council seat for an African country. A Zimbabwean court Monday postponed the trial of hunter Theo Bronkhorst, who is linked to the killing of a rare black maned lion named Cecil that caused an international controversy back in July. Bronkhorst is accused of taking part in the illegal tracking and killing of the protected lion by American dentist Walter Palmer. It is the second time the case has been delayed, now to October 15th. Bronkhorst's lawyer insists the facts presented by the prosecution do not reach the level of a crime and wants the case thrown out. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's president and current African Union chairman says conflicts are a major impediment to Africa's development.
The prevalence of peace not only creates conducive conditions for development, but also ensures that the maximum possible resource can be dedicated to development programs and projects.
Britain says it will deploy peacekeepers to South Sudan and Somalia. Tensions are rising again in Burkina Faso. A month-long teacher strike continues in Kenya despite a court order to return to the classrooms. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari vows to defeat Boko Haram.
Nigeria and her neighbors, Cameroon, Chad, Niger plus Benin, are working together to face this common threat within the regional framework of the Lake Chad Basin Commission.
And world leaders at the United Nations draw protesters. Those stories plus Mark Oldman. Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, who is also current chairman of the African Union, says conflicts are an impediment to the continent's socioeconomic development and integration. To highlight this, he said, Africa has designated peace and security as one of its six key pillars and a top priority. Mr. Mugabe spoke Monday at the ongoing 70th session of the UN General Assembly in New York.
The prevalence of peace not only creates conducive conditions for development, but also ensures that the maximum possible resource can be dedicated to development programs and projects. We welcome and encourage the continued cooperation between the United Nations and the African Union, principally through the latter's Peace and Security Council, in advancing peace and security in Africa.
Mr. Mugabe said Africa is determined to accelerate its economic integration to improve the well-being of its citizens, as evident by the adoption earlier this year of Agenda 2063. But he said Africa needs international partners to implement Agenda 2063.
Africa is not looking for handouts. Rather, it is looking for partners in massive infrastructural development, in creating and exploiting the value chains from the God-given natural resources, and in improving the quality of life of the continent's citizens. The entire world stands to benefit from an economically empowered African continent than from one emasculated by deprivation and with an over-dependence on others.
Mr. Mugabe also called for reform of the United Nations, including the Security Council and General Assembly, to reflect what he called the just demands and expectations of the majority.
We are disappointed that we have lost the opportunity of this anniversary to address this burning issue of the reform of the United Nations Security Council in a manner that satisfies the just demands and expectations of the majority among us. Mr. President, we equally call for the revitalization of the General Assembly, the sole universally representative and democratic organ of the United Nations, so that it can effectively carry out its charter-mandated responsibilities. Accordingly, we fully support the call for inclusivity and transparency in selecting our organization's Secretary General by ensuring that the General Assembly plays a more significant role in that process. After all, the Secretary General is at the service of all the member states and not only that of an exclusive, privileged few.
President Mugabe said Zimbabwe desires and is committed to nurturing friendly relations with other nations in accordance with the principles of the United Nations. He called for the lifting of Western sanctions on Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe desires and is committed to nurturing friendly relations with other nations. but he cannot tolerate interference in his domestic affairs. I therefore denounce in the strongest terms the illegal sanctions that are imposed on my country by the European Union and the USA, and call for their immediate and unconditional removal.
That was Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe and current chairman of the African Union speaking Monday at the ongoing 70th session of the UN General Assembly. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says his government is determined to deal with the huge problems it inherited from its predecessors, including massive unemployment and corruption. But for now, he said Boko Haram's war against the people of Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Cameroon has put the sub-region on the front lines of the fight against terrorism. President Buhari said Nigeria, along with its regional partners, has put in place a robust strategy to defeat Boko Haram.
Nigeria and her neighbors, Cameroon, Chad, Niger plus Benin, are working together to face this common threat within the regional framework of the Lake Chad Basin Commission. We have established a multinational joint task force to confront, degrade, and defeat Boko Haram. We have driven them away from many of their strongholds, killed or captured many of their operatives or commanders, and freed several hundred of hostages.
In April last year, Boko Haram extremists kidnapped more than 270 girls from the Chibok boarding school in northern Nigeria. President Buhari said rescuing the Chibok girls alive and unharmed is one of the major objectives of the regional operation against Boko Haram.
We are working around the clock to ensure their safety and eventual reunion with their families. Chibok girls are constantly on our minds and in our plans.
The Nigerian president also said his government is committed to combating corruption and cross-border financial crimes, which he described as some of the evils undermining the well-being of societies around the world.
Let me reaffirm Nigerian government's unwavering commitment to fight corruption and illicit financial flows. By any consideration, corruption and cross-border financial crimes are impediments to development, economic growth, and the realization of well-being of citizens across the globe. Nigeria is ready and willing to partner with international agencies and individual countries on a bilateral basis to confront crimes and corruption. In particular, I call upon the global community to urgently redouble efforts towards strengthening the mechanism for dismantling safe havens for proceeds of corruption and ensuring the return of stolen funds and assets to their countries of origin.
That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari speaking Monday at the ongoing 70th session of the UN General Assembly. As certain world leaders began speaking at the opening of the United Nations General Assembly in New York on Monday, protesters were just blocks away demonstrating against them. A one-block pedestrian area near the United Nations building is the site of daily demonstrations against various governments. Viewers Carolyn Presutui takes us inside the protests.
Terrorists, you are the order of UN now, now, now!
Protesters carried an oversized caricature of Iranian President Hassan Rouhani as he was speaking before the UN General Assembly.
We will not forget the past, but we do not wish to live in the past.
But Dalaram Ahmadi says the Iran she knows is living in the past.
I think the United Nations is a place where countries come together to discuss the future of the world, a better place for children and the youth to grow up in. But I don't think it's a place for Hassan Rouhani and his regime to be given a platform.
This group marched backwards to protest the Iran nuclear agreement because they say the six negotiating powers backed down to Iran.
So Iran executes people, not agreements.
Ukrainians protested Russia's invasion of their country and denounced Russian President Vladimir Putin as he was delivering his speech to the assembly.
Don't kill our children. go home. Putin, go to Russia.
Egyptians argued with each other about President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi.
This man robbed Egypt power through a military coup 2 years ago. And the funny thing that the United Nations did nothing about it.
We need that kind of power right now. It's not going to last long. We need the military right now. We need someone with power to get the land stabilized.
These protest groups know they can't change the schedule of the United Nations. They just want to make sure that opposing voices are heard. And some of those voices were heard through silence. Falun Gong used its meditation exercises as a protest against the Chinese government. Being a city block away is the closest many will ever get to their political leaders, but they hope their voices will be heard as clearly as those government heads inside the building. At the United Nations, Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 29th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on all of our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. British Prime Minister David Cameron has announced the deployment of several hundred troops to South Sudan and Somalia to shore up stability in those areas. But as Henry Richwell reports from London, aid groups say South Sudan desperately needs other forms of assistance.
South Sudan descended into civil war in late 2013, just 2 years after gaining independence. British Prime Minister David Cameron announced Monday that up to 300 soldiers would join the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan, while another 70 British troops will be deployed to work with a UN force supporting the African Union's mission in Somalia.
It's in our national interest, not just living up to our international obligations, but we will benefit if Somalia has a future free from extremism. We will benefit if South Sudan as a country can function and not drive huge numbers in terms of migrants across the Mediterranean.
The UN mission in South Sudan currently has more than 12,000 troops and protects thousands of people who have crowded onto UN bases to escape violence. The British troops will not play any role in the fighting, but will instead provide combat training and logistical support. The deployment is unlikely to achieve Cameron's desired outcome, says Marika Shomeris, a South Sudan specialist at the Overseas Development Institute in London.
There's clear cause and effect. The UK sends 70 troops to Somalia, 300 to South Sudan. There will be less terrorism and less migration. It just does not exist. So there are other interests and other reasons why it's a good idea to contribute to a UN peacekeeping mission, but it's not to address migration or terrorism in the UK.
Rival government and opposition forces signed a peace deal last month, but sporadic fighting continues. In the worst-hit areas, the hospitals are full of malnourished children. 40% of the population is reliant on food aid. The UN says that unless treatment is scaled up immediately, 50,000 children are likely to die. Melanie Markham of the charity World Vision says it's vital the peace deal holds.
We're now delivering food aid, nutrition programs, other items that people are in desperate need of. So we're very positive, and this has only happened since the signing of the peace agreement.
Aid agencies warn that the world must act fast to avert a desperate shortage of food, or the toll from the South Sudan conflict could rise sharply. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In Burkina Faso, the political crisis might not be completely over just yet. The RSP, the presidential guard behind the failed coup earlier this month, is refusing to give up its arms. Disarmament was one of the conditions the RSP agreed to in a peace deal with the army last week. The transitional government has called for the people to mobilize. Emily Yop reports for VOA from Ouagadougou.
Gilbert on the execution pole shouted a few hundred people in the main square of Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, on Monday. A few hours earlier, the news broke that the RSP and their leader, Gilbert Diendéré, refused to disarm after agreeing to do so in last week's peace deal. Protester Idrissa Nogo says he supports the national army in its effort to disarm the presidential guards. He adds that they are here today to answer the call from the army to stay mobilized, to help the army reason with the RSP. The RSP was behind the September 16th coup attempt in which soldiers arrested President Michel Kafando and Prime Minister Yacouba Isaac-Zida. After a week of pressure from West African states and the Burkina National Army, Diendéré stepped down and the transitional government was reinstated last Wednesday. For protester Hervé Ouattara, this refusal to yield the weapons show that the RSP can't be trusted and needs to be more than just disarmed. He says as long as the RSP and Diendéré will remain, they won't sleep. He says the population will mobilize until the general is arrested and the RSP is dissolved. The RSP is asking for guarantees of safety for themselves and their families before handing over the weapons. One of the first measures taken by the transitional government during their first post-coup cabinet meeting last Friday was to dissolve the RSP and open a commission of inquiry into the coup. Violence after the takeover left at least 11 people dead and more than 100 injured. Emily Yob for VOA News from Ouagadougou.
Kenyan teachers have been on strike for nearly a month, demanding that the government implement a 50 to 60% wage increase ordered by the Supreme Court. On Friday, another court ordered the teachers to suspend their strike, but the unions were waiting for a meeting with a judge on Monday before instructing their members what to do next. VOA's Jill Craig was at the court and files this report from Nairobi.
Teachers and students across Kenya waited Monday to hear the result of an Employment and Labor Relations Court hearing that could end the national teachers' strike. But after a packed courtroom of teachers, union bosses, lawyers, and journalists waited 90 minutes to hear arguments, teachers' union officials announced the judge was ill and would need to postpone the proceedings to Thursday. In the meantime, they said, the strike would go on.
The strike continues. This is a protected strike. This is a legal strike, and you can see we must be ready for a very long stretch.
That was Akelo Misori, Secretary General of KUPET, the Kenyan Union of Post-Primary Education Teachers. The Secretary General of the Kenyan National Union of Teachers, William Sosion, gave his members similar advice.
It is not rocket science. It is simple. Then it means teachers continue remaining in strike absolutely until after Thursday, when they can be advised once we give our submissions and canvass our arguments in court.
English literature teacher Washington Othiambo was present in the courtroom Monday and said he supports the pay increase ordered by the Supreme Court.
It will be difficult to bulldoze teachers back to work without a proper or a defined way through which they're going to get this award, because it has already been awarded.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has previously said the government does not have the funding to obey the court's order, and the government's Teacher Service Commission has filed an appeal to overturn the Supreme Court's ruling. But primary school teacher Henry Njenga is skeptical.
The government is just unfair. I think they're just doing this out of malice. He's talking about over billions for laptop. Who is in that school to teach the laptop? Why can't you use that laptop money for now? Then later on, when you are settled and in school, they can bring up the laptop.
The government's appeals court hearing is scheduled to take place Tuesday, 2 days before the unions go back to court. But as officials take to the courtrooms, Kenya's teachers and students remain out of class. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Egypt stunned defending champions Angola 53-52 at the Africa Women's Basketball Championships in Yaounde, Cameroon on Monday. Nigeria beat Senegal 75-64. Cameroon outwitted Gabon 67-56. Guinea pipped Algeria 67-66. Uganda outplayed South Africa 55-43. And Mali edged Mozambique 57-52. Earlier on Sunday, Nigeria beat Guinea 100-47. Meanwhile, today, Tuesday, the preliminary round draws to a conclusion when Uganda challenge Mali, South Africa face Cameroon, Gabon play Mozambique, Egypt face Senegal, Guinea challenge Angola, and Algeria encounter Nigeria. In rugby news, hosts and African champions South Africa dismissed Kenya 31-5 to prevail in the final of the Africa Women's Rugby Sevens Olympic qualifier in Johannesburg on Sunday. Tunisia overpowered Zimbabwe 33-0 in the bronze medal playoff. Botswana outwitted Zambia 12-5 to win the bowl final. Madagascar outplayed Senegal 15-0 in the plate final, and Uganda overpowered Namibia 36-0 in the shield final. Consequently, South Africa earn an automatic ticket to the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Kenya, Tunisia and Zimbabwe get a second chance to qualify during a global playoff next year in June. In football news, FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup silver medalists Nigeria Falconets edged their hosts the Democratic Republic of Congo 2-1 in the qualifier for the 2016 FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Kinshasa on Sunday. Zambia and South Africa played to a scoreless draw in Lusaka, while Ghana pipped their Equatorial Guinea hosts by a solitary goal in Malabo. The match between hosts Burkina Faso and Ethiopia in Ouagadougou is to be rescheduled owing to the recent turmoil in the Burkinabe capital. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, September 29th.
Good morning. This is William Kuklu from Monrovia, Liberia. I'd like to commend the UN Security Council for extending its mission in Liberia up to 2016. But I believe the UN Security Council needs to do more by maintaining their mission in Liberia up to 2017 presidential and general elections. I believe this is critical to the security and peace and forward march of Liberia. Thank you and have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The interim leader of the Central African Republic, Catherine Samba Panza, left early from the United Nations General Assembly to return home because of violence plaguing the capital of her country. Reports from Bangui say dozens of people have been killed in 3 days of clashes involving Christians and Muslims, sparked by the death of a Muslim man. On Monday evening, hundreds of prisoners escaped from the main prison in the capital. Earlier in the day, at least three people died when protesters gathered in downtown Bangui to march on the presidential palace. Protesters blame UN peacekeepers for shooting into the crowd, but the UN peacekeeping force, MINUSCA, denied that its troops opened fire on the protesters. Burkina Faso's army says the elite presidential guard behind a recent coup attempt is refusing to be disarmed. The army says the planned disarmament of the guard, known as the RSP, has reached a dead end because soldiers will not give up their weapons and because of ambiguous behavior of RSP chief and coup leader General Gilbert Diendéré. The disarmament effort began Friday, the day Burkina Faso's leaders officially disbanded the guard. The cabinet was expected to hold a meeting on Monday. That is it for this Tuesday, September 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We ask you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. We'll come to you live from New York, where world leaders are gathering for the United Nations General Assembly. They will address a variety of global concerns, including the European migrants crisis, climate change, and this year's UNGA theme, the UN at 70, a new commitment to action. Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa.